What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Mattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. And I've got a question for you, Allison. Have you ever played Dungeons & Dragons?
I haven't. I think my brother did.
Yeah?
My oldest brother used to play Dungeons & Dragons.
We know how it works. You have like a character, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe you're an elf or you're a mage or you're an elf.
What's a mage again?
A mage is like a wizard, you know?
Okay.
Like fireball spells and all that.
Oh, the guy just died. Dave.
No.
Didn't he die last
Gary.
Year?
Gary
oh,
Gygax.
Okay.
Yeah, it was at least last year.
Yeah, it was.
But at any rate, my point being, in this game, you have a character
mm-hmm.
and you gain experience points. And then you reach that point where you level up and you go from like you're a level one elven mage to a level two elven mage.
Right.
And suddenly you have new spells and a new type of fireball, you know? And then there's a lot of this in video games too. You know, you reach that next level, you gain new powers, new responsibilities.
Right. Humans, whether in games or in real life, are always trying to advance. I guess that's the point you're getting at, isn't it?
Yeah. Like you're trying to become a level 5 editor, right?
Indeed.
At which point you get fireballs.
Yeah. For writers who mess up on their questions of the day, I get to hawk nuclear missiles at them.
Oh, always
no,
do.
I would never do that. Maybe a fireball.
Yeah. I think fireball's more your speed for level 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But my point being that civilizations, according to some cosmologists and science fiction writers,
right.
also level up.
Yeah. So today we thought we'd bring to you a look at the Kardashev scale, thanks to Nikolai Kardashev, a Russian astrophysicist and director of the Space Research Institute of the Academy of Sciences in Moscow. And this was a guy who conducted the first Soviet search for intelligent extraterrestrial signals in 1963.
Yeah, it was like Soviet SETI going on.
Yeah, yeah, not Soviet City, but Soviet SETI.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to you're looking for intelligent extraterrestrial life in the universe.
Sure.
That's great, but what are you looking for, actually, you know? You need something to look for. You need some idea of what this intelligent life could be. And as always, we end up falling back on our own model.
I mean, what more do we have to go on?
Yeah. We're the only intelligent, you know, species in the universe that we know of. So if we're going to guess at what that might entail for another planet in another corner of the universe, we have to base it on this model.
Right.
Right.
Right. That makes sense.
So he basically would take our, our civilization, all right, and extrapolate on it. You know, look at what our technology is, what our understanding of science is, and say what would that be like in, you know, X number of years? Because one of the things when you're looking for alien life, you got to think some of these alien life forms, if they exist, could be billions of years ahead of us. So they've got a huge head start, and they could, their technology could already be really advanced. So how do you classify that? And then how do you look for it?
And what's the common thread that runs through all civilizations? I mean, what do we need? What does every species need to survive? We need energy, of course.
Right.
And so Kardashev's scale is built on energy.
Yeah. Now, starting off, well, not really starting off, but currently according to Carl Sagan, about a 0.7 on the Kardashev scale.
So let's run you through the different kinds of civilizations. Kardashev named three, a type 1, a type 2, and type 3. So we're going to start you off with type 1.
Well, type 0, technically, because type 0 is what we technically are, or type 0.7. Anyway, we're not on the scale yet.
That's never a good thing, I don't think.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. But yeah, we're not quite on the scale yet. But we're getting closer and closer. Type 1 is the next one. This is when if we reach this point, we're going to level up.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about what a type 1 civilization should be, what Kardashev imagined it to be. He thought that these kind of civilizations are masters of planetary energy, which is no small feat. Mm-hmm. Meaning that they can harness the sum energy of an entire world. But we're not quite there yet. Again, as Robert was saying, Sagan thought we were 0.7. So we depend on fossil fuels, as you guys well know, as opposed to wind, solar, geothermal for the most part.
Yeah, dead plants instead of actual global forces.
Right. We're beholden to the weather, and we haven't really figured out how to manipulate it yet, except for the Olympics in Beijing.
Yeah, and that's kind of testy. You know, it's kind of like,
indeed.
Fire some cannons into it. You know, it's...
opening ceremony was pretty clear that night, so I think China would describe that as.
But that's
surefire
far different
evidence.
From being like, okay, we've got hurricanes coming in the continent. How are we going to shut one of those down?
No doubt, you know? I agree.
But yeah, it would just, and it also would entail, according to some cosmologists, it would just entail becoming a planetary civilization.
What do you mean by that?
Well, all right. Well, we're kind of the seeds are there,
right?
We are beginning to have more of a planetary language.
Oh, what is a planetary language?
Well, it's English.
It's not French.
It's not French, but according to some, it's English. Especially, how do you say that guy's name?
Oh, right, the gentleman with the crazy hair from City University of New York, as opposed to NYU, which I think we erroneously said before, Michio Kaku.
Kaku, yeah, Mr. Kaku, who's
doctor
awesome.
To you.
Doctor, yes, Dr. Kaku, who's all over the internet and is awesome, loves talking about this stuff. He points out that we already are getting to where we have a planetary language in the form of English. We already have a planetary communication system in the terms of the internet. We're growing planetary economies such as European Union, and we're beginning to have a planetary culture in the form of Lady Gaga. Well, that's not his example, but that's mine. You know, it's like there are these things that like everybody seems to love because everybody loves Lady Gaga. So
you can't even sing one of her songs, I bet.
I could if I really wanted to, but we're not.
Right. We're a science podcast. Yeah. You guys don't want to hear that from us anyway. No Lady Gaga impressions. Right. So Kaku stresses that a type 1 civilization will have mastered pretty much most forms of planetary energy.
Mm-hmm. And this would be thousands or millions times our current planetary output of energy. All right. You know, we're talking controlling earthquakes, volcanoes, being able to build cities out in the middle of the ocean. Just, you know, any of these sort of far future ideas that show people just really, you know, like nothing that the earth can throw at us can stop us. Because that's the other thing. It's like
we'll be able to snicker at the weather forecast.
Yeah,
earthquake. Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah. So like all the extinction events, or at least most of the extinction events all the extinction events that relate to the earth itself will be solved.
Really? But how does he think, cosmic bodies crashing into the earth?
Well, see, that's the thing. That's where we would still have a potential threat, because we may be masters of planetary energy.
Okay.
But the rest of the energy in the solar system, in the universe, et cetera, that's still beyond our grasp. That doesn't mean we're not traveling into space, because you could be a type 1 civilization, theoretically, and still be traveling around the solar system. It just, you know, it's like you can walk the streets. It doesn't mean you own the streets.
Uh-huh.
You know? So
what kind of time frame are we talking about here?
Well, it is, as always, it depends who you ask. Our friend Mr. Keku thinks we'll get there in a mere century, which sounds a little
That's
crazy,
fast.
But,
pretty
you know,
fast.
If we're 0.7, I mean, Sagan said we were 0.7, and I think we're somewhere like a 0.74 right now on some of these scales. People, like, you know, these are the people that are
There's
watching.
There's a Kardashev indicator on the internet somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, probably so. It's kind of like the experience point counter in a video game or in your Dungeons & Dragons, mm-hmm. and people are like, oh, man, I only have to kill 7 more orcs, and then we're totally civilization 1.
Right, so that's an optimistic prediction. If you asked physicist Freeman Dyson, on the other hand, he's thinking maybe within 200 years is when the leap is going to occur.
Yeah, so, you know, and you know, a lot of factors will, you know, play into that sort of thing. A big one, of course, is will we destroy ourselves before we level up?
Right, right.
And this is a huge deal that a number of cosmologists stress that this is a very dangerous transition from type 0 to type 1, because are we going to kill ourselves with war, you know? Or are we going to, you know, all burn up in some sort of nuclear Armageddon? Are we going to ravage the planet to where we, you know, we have nothing left to go forward with? When we actually reach the point of becoming a type 1 civilization, you know, they think that we'll have a lot of this stuff worked out. We'll be a global culture, so global cultures aren't going to wage war against themselves, you know? It's like, we'll all be one, that kind of thing. So, and you can sort of take that or leave it as you like, you know, because that brings in the whole question, as humanity becomes more and more advanced technologically, or even become more unified, you know, on a political, cultural level, are we really going to outgrow our self-destructive tendencies?
That's an optimistic thought.
It's an open question, yeah.
I look forward to that day, should it ever occur. So you guys know that we're always fans of science fiction. So what's a good example of science fiction type 1 civilization?
I think a lot of your more – and the only specific example I ran across was like sort of like the old Buck Rogers, you know, where he's moving around the solar system a little, but the energy involved is basically type 1 civilization. I think a lot of your sort of – I think you see a lot of it in some cyberpunk, you know, where it's like you're not like super spacefaring kind of future world, but it's like they're getting the energy figured out on a planetary level. I guess some of your more optimistic – yeah, of course – cyberpunk tends not to be all that optimistic, because some of your more optimistic views of a you know, not too distant future.
Okay. So let's level up. Let's head on up to type 2 civilizations. What do you
think?
Yeah.
This is where things get pretty far out in a hurry. When
right.
You go
we start
to
talking
two.
About Dyson swarms and Dyson spheres.
Yeah. Our friend from the last section, we just talked about Freeman Dyson. And all these guys are still alive, by the way, even Kardashev. So type 2 civilization is all about the sun, really. It's about harnessing the energy of the solar system, namely the star at the center of the solar system.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course, we're talking pretty much here about solar energy. It's the big one. Freeman Dyson proposed this idea called a Dyson swarm.
Right.
And this is, again, this is kind of like, you know, him thinking along the lines that Kardashev had laid out and saying, like, all right, what would this entail if you could capture, you know, the power of the entire sun? So this is like taking satellites, like solar harvesters,
mm-hmm.
and either like looping them in a belt around a star or just completely swarming them around a star, you know, like flies around a rotting steak or something, you know? And they just harvest all to the point where they're just harvesting like all the energy of that star and transferring it back to the
mankind,
masters.
Yeah. Wherever mankind may be. Right. And then haven't they also talked about enslaving a black hole for a type 2 civilization?
Yeah, yeah. Any of these situations where they talk about like harnessing some sort of massive, star or star-related body like a black hole. Yeah, that would be another instance of type 2 status. And Dyson also had – there's also the idea of the Dyson sphere, which is basically in like a giant eggshell, imagine, you know, a big round shell that goes around a star.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a Cadbury egg. Maybe it's because we're recording this in the afternoon.
Yeah, and it could be. I mean, they could make it shaped like a Cadbury egg and even have it like with the fancy foil wrappers, because they're type 2 civilizations. Who's going to stop them?
Right, right.
But this one has shown up in a lot of science fiction. I know they encountered one in Star Trek.
Okay.
A Dyson sphere. And then also in like the Warhammer 40,000 universe, there's like one with an evil energy god in the center or something. They're everywhere.
Cause in Dune.
They're really, is there a Dyson sphere in Dune?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's a type 2 civilization in
yes.
Dune.
Yes. Yeah. Dune is a good example of type 2 civilization. That's the thing. Also,
yeah, in addition to the Dyson sphere, we're going to be able to do cool stuff in a type 2 civilization, like interstellar travel and, yeah, the ability to move into our planets.
Yeah, a lot of megastructure type things, like, the stuff in like Larry Niven's Ring World or the Halo games where you have these just giant, you know, structures that are floating out there. And I mean, that's all type 2 civilization type stuff. Of course, when will we actually reach the point where we could have those things? Well, Kardashev himself said that it would take a mere 3,200 years to reach type 2 status. So it's a little ways off.
Right. So now we're working on 3,300 years because we still have to make the leap to the type 1 civilization from our lowly 0.7 or 0.74 status. Mm-hmm. So factor that in. And now that we have another 3,200 years. So we're working on 3,300 years.
Yeah. Don't mark it on your Google calendar just yet. Because again, these are very rough figures we're dealing with here. You know, it's not like, oh, type 2 civilization day. We get to take a half day at work. You know,
let's get to the apex of civilization, shall we?
The pinnacle. Yes. The type 3 civilization. And this is a natural progression here. At type 3, you command energy on a galactic scale.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're basically talking godlike powers.
Like, right. So everybody's going to be naming their kids Zeus and stuff like that.
Oh, I don't know. Will there be kids? Will they have names? I don't know. That's the thing.
That's a good point.
It gets to the point where, I mean, what are we at that point? Are we people anymore? It's like very, you know,
post-human
and transhuman kind of a deal. And that's where the sci-fi examples get kind of weird because, like, technically the Star Wars Empire is an example of the Type 3 civilization, but just in terms of its scope, really, you know, because that's not what a Type 3 civilization would be like, you know.
Yeah, you made the analogy before that predicting what a Type 3 civilization would be like is kind of like predicting the weather. I mean, it's just so far out. It's so unpredictable.
And the more far out you get, the more difficult it is to imagine, you know. Because, like, for one thing, you're getting into stuff like planet energy. Which could, you know, involve, like, warping time and space, you know? So, you know, it's just very difficult to reason. It's fun to imagine what that could entail, you know, like Doctor Who Time Lords, you know, the Monoliths and 2001, you know, all sorts of really trippy and amazing stuff. But it's technology on a level that's really hard to fathom.
Right. So Planck energy is talking about energy that's a quadrillion times larger than our most powerful atom smasher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Large Hadron Collider right now. Or actually, I don't know if that's our most powerful one. Do you? I got to think it's one of the most.
That we know of. It could be secret ones.
Right. So the energy, as fantastic as it may seem, is by definition within the range of a type 2 or type 3 civilization.
Yeah. And you were asking earlier, you're like, well, how about type 4 civilization? But I mean, at that point, you're just getting silly. I mean, well, you're not necessarily getting silly, but it's like, again, it's like we're already talking about godlike technological powers that we can barely begin to fathom. So, you know, type 4, who knows what that would entail. But the big thing though, the thing that we can fathom in theory about all this is that each civilization would involve more and more energy being used.
Yeah.
And therefore we
and used efficiently and used in a large scale way.
Right. And being thrown into a communications system in theory. And that comes back to the whole reason that Kardashev came up with all of this stuff. Like his thinking is that, all right, you're scanning radio waves in deep space, you know. Type 1 civilization would be very difficult, very unlikely to detect. But a type 2 civilization would be putting out enough that you'd be able to detect it. And type 3 even more so.
Right.
So it comes down to that. And presumably type 4 would be, you know, it'd be even more energy on a scale that it would either you would be able to detect it or it would be just everywhere anyway. So you wouldn't be able to detect it. Like maybe type 4, I mean, who can even imagine, you know, like maybe it's space time itself is like a fourth level civilization.
I say this is a good time to invite listener feedback because I would like to hear what you guys imagine a fourth civilization to be.
And we are far from sci-fi experts, so you know, hit us with your examples of type 1 through 3 in science fiction, and you know, let us know what you think. Because I mean, that's the ultimate thing about a lot of this cosmological stuff is they're models that we use to try and understand the future and understand the cosmos. So they're very thought-provoking.
So, yeah, if you want to hear Robert ponder more over what the Earth may be like in 500 years or 5,000 years, hey, go to howstuffworks.com. We just publish articles on both of those topics.
Yeah, they're pretty brief, but they hit the topics pretty hard, I think.
And Josh just posted on this, too, so you can always check it out at the blogs, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Josh did a post on, I think, about humanity's smugness when it comes to this particular scale. So
yeah,
check it out.
So what you got in your hand there?
I have some listener email that we received.
It's like a photo, actually, that you have in your hand.
Oh, well, yeah, well, we'll get to that in the next podcast. But no, these two, I have two emails here from some listeners in Australia.
Oh, so Australia.
First, we have one from Taylor.
Yep.
And Taylor writes, "Hey guys, just thought I would let you know how to say g'day. You say it like g'day. The D is short and the AI sound is long on the end." So again, he's saying, wait, let me get this. G'day instead of g'day. So
great.
Apparently that's a common problem when people try and do Australian accents or even just mimic some of the lingo.
We also got another email from Australia that kind of cracked me up, I have to say.
Oh, yes, this one is good.
This
too.
Is our very first correction upon correction.
Yeah, this was a listener by the name of Matthew wrote in and said, "I'm correcting a correction." One of your previous listeners from Australia obviously doesn't know about the funnel web spider, which lives in the Greater Sydney region. At least one person is bitten each year because they forgot to check their shoes. And with snakes, the eastern brown and the red belly black are often found at home in regional centers.
So, all right.
So there you go. Because I think the whole thing was we did the podcast about the venom, and we're like, whoa, Australia is just like crazy venomous.
Right.
And and then someone wrote in and was like, it's really not that bad as long as you're not out in the
Although she did permanently give me the visual of riding a kangaroo into work, which is still
Oh yeah, she said like she wanted to let us know that everyone doesn't live in caves or ride kangaroos. And though we're making fun, I mean, Australia does get a bad rap a lot of times because, I mean, like any place, there are stereotypes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just like I'm obnoxious Americans that we are.
Yeah, with our guns. But so anyway, if you have any other corrections, hit us with them. If you have corrections upon corrections, hit us with those.
If you have corrections upon corrections upon corrections.
No, well, don't do those because that's just good.
Send them to Facebook because we're on Facebook.
Yeah, and Twitter. Lab Stuff on Twitter, Stuff in the Science Lab on Facebook.
All right, guys, that's all we got. Thanks for listening.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Is waiting for you at King's Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. King's Island is now open on weekends.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.